We're holding on Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, the seventh line by the two dots. The Mishnah had said that if there was any fallen matter in the koinets, we talked about if there was a pebble, if there was a grain of salt, if there was a grain of lavona, even though, as we said, salt is placed on the koinets afterwards, and lavona is also offered together with it, as we're now going to be discussing in more detail in connection with the next Mishnah. Nevertheless, they can't be part of the koinets itself, and if they are, then it's possible. And the Mishnah had said, "Mipnei Omru," because the Chachamim had said, "Koinets are chosu, are yes, they're possible." If the koinets is missing some of its substance, or if it's extra, if there's too little or too much in there, possible, then that koinets is possible. So the Gemara points out, "My Iri Mishum Chosu V'Yeser." Why does the Mishnah have to mention the point? Because the koinets has too much or too little in it. The Kippur claim Mishum Chatzitza. Don't you have a better reason? Isn't there an issue of Chatzitza? That if you have this fallen matter in the koinets, and therefore it's a chatzitza between his hand and the koinets, or even between one part of the flower and another. So Rashi points out, even let's say, for example, the pebble or whatever was inside the koinets. Fine, but what it does is, in effect, it divides the koinets into two parts. The Avnei Nezer points out an interesting thing in this Gemara. So you could ask, what's the problem? Let's say you have the pebbles surrounded on all sides by flour, and you just happen to have it in the middle. What would be the problem? How is it divided into two parts? Well, he says, here we have, for example, the Alter Rebbe talks about in an entirely different context in the halachas of Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos, which we're going to be talking about in more detail later in the Masechta, Be'ez Hashem. But you have a din that every letter has to be mukaf gvil. It has to be surrounded by blank parchment on all sides. And the Alter Rebbe talks about, suppose you have a hole in the parchment, and then you write the letter over the hole. So even if the hole is not actually breaking up the letter into two, nevertheless, it's a problem because, in effect, the hole separates one part of the letter from another. Even if you have part of the stroke of the letter is on both sides of the hole, such that the hole is inside the thickness of the stroke, the Alter Rebbe says it's still a problem. The most you can do is, he says, you can scrape away some of the ink so that the hole is now next to the letter and you have blank parchment. And so, in other words, that in that particular area, the stroke will be narrower than it otherwise would normally be. That's not a problem. But in any case, you see the same kind of thing, where even though the two sides are touching one another, nevertheless, it's no good. And so the Avnei Nezer says the same thing over here. So why did the Mishnah have to mention the point about the koinets being lacking something if the pebble or whatever is there, when anyway it's going to be possible on grounds of chatzitza? And the answer is, I'm going to be a Miyamin Atzad. So the Miyamin says, because what we mean is, let's say, the pebble or whatever was on the side. So it's new, as we're going to go on to say now, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, that you use, according to most Rishonim, you use three fingers to do the Knitza. Well then, in that case, so you have, suppose the pebble is on, you use the middle three fingers, you leave the little finger and the thumb available to wipe off the excess, as the Gemara is going to say. So then, in that case, so let's say the pebble was on the side, next to the thumb. So it's not going to be, so there's no chatzitza, because you don't need it to touch the thumb anyway. You're just going to use the thumb to wipe off the excess. But nevertheless, it still means that the koinets doesn't have its full shear, because it is supposed to be the full amount of flour and oil that will fill up that space of those entire three fingers. But you're right. If it was elsewhere in the koinets, then yeah, it would be possible anyway on grounds. It would be anywhere possible on grounds of chatzitza. So the Gemara says, "Omalei Abaye L'Rava." So Abaye asks you, "Of a Ketzad Koimzin, how exactly do you do Kmitza?" And we've been talking all this time about taking the Kmitza. How in practice do you do it? An interesting point, by the way, a side point maybe that's relevant. Abaye was a Koim. Rava Tosfos discusses in a number of places, seems from some Gemara that he was not a Koyan, although there's different possibilities about that. There's a Gemara in a couple of places that mentions that Abaya and either Rava or Rabba were descended from Eli, which would make them Koyanim. So if the Gemara says Rava over there, it might mean Rava was a Koyan too, but there are Gemaras that seem to imply that not. Either the correct Gemara in those places is Rabba, or maybe Rava was descended from Eli only on his mother's side. In any case, so here, Abaya, the Koyan, is asking Rava, who apparently is not a Koyan, a practical matter. When the Bais HaMikdash is built, how am I going to do Kmitza? Omalei, So Rava tells him, Kitakansi Inchi, the way that people normally take a handful, which would imply with all your fingers, when you usually, if you want to scoop up something, usually you're going to scoop it up with four fingers.
Why would a Kohen ask a non-Kohen how he has to do Kmitza?
I guess he didn't know. Bapashas Abaya had not learned how it's done, and now he needs to know for purposes of this Gemara anyhow, irrespective of when the Bais Hamikdash, whether the Bais Hamikdash is going to be built in his lifetime or not. It's still a halacha that we need to know, but why he's asking Rava, I guess because he figured Rava would know.
That's very hard to understand. I mean,
not necessarily. We actually find a Gemara in Ksubas. That mentions that the Bais Hamikdash had experts on staff who would teach the halacha, who would teach the Kohenim various halachas that they need to know for the Bais Hamikdash, because the Kohenim are the only ones who can do the avodah. But they're not always going to be so adept at it when they first start out. So yeah, I mean, if Abaye had grown up in the time of the Bais Hamikdash and he had actually been doing the avodah, then sure he would know. He wouldn't necessarily need to ask. But he wouldn't have to ask. But here, where Abaye lived a couple hundred years after the Churban, then. So in fact, that Gemara and Ksubas, that Gemara and Ksubas specifically mentions, actually, there were Talmud Chachamim who would teach the Kohenim the halachas of Kmitza. And they would actually get paid a salary for the Bais Hamikdash.
They were Kohenim themselves, then?
Maybe not. Just that Talmud Chachamim specifically, they could have been Kohenim. I don't think it specifically says they had to be.
Who gave the Kohanim, I mean, from Aaron HaKohen, he gave all the halachas of the Kehuna to his sons, and then it was transmitted from Kohen to Kohen.
Sure, as long as they're actually doing it on a day-to-day basis, then sure. But here, for example, take an average Kohen nowadays and ask him, how would you do Kmitza, or how would you do any of these avodas? He'd probably have no clue. So fine, Abaye is not the average Kohen. Abaye is not the average Kohen, granted, but still, he never learned he learned the halachas of Kmitza, the halachas of that the Kohenis has to be full, and that you have to have the proper thoughts in mind, etc., everything that we've been discussing so far, everything that we're going to be discussing in subsequent Shvatim, but he never learned, apparently, the practicality is how it's done.
That sounds inconceivable, I mean,
okay. Nonetheless, that's how it is. So Rava says, Kitakamti Inchi, the way that people usually take a handful, meaning with four fingers. Aisvei, but Abaye says, and I have a contradiction to that. It can't. We learn in a Braisa, each of the fingers of the hand has a different name in Lashon Kodesh. And each of them has a different function. The Gemara brings also in Ksubas, in an earlier part of Ksubas, that the Eibishter made a person's fingers to, the Eibishter gave a person separated fingers rather than just having like one paw with all of them together, because each one has a different function. And in addition, the Gemara points out of it, each of the fingers tapers towards the end, so that you can use it to block your ears if there's something going on, like Lashon Hara or whatever, that you shouldn't be listening. In any case, the point is, each of them has a separate name, and each of them has a separate function in halacha. Zu Zeres, the little finger is called Zeres, and it's used to measure the choshen. The pasuk says that the choshen, when it was folded over, was Zeres Orkev, Zeres Rachvay, one Zeres. Most of the choshen understand a Zeres to be a half an amma. So then it was a Zeres by a Zeres. Meaning, the way you'd measure it is it would mean actually from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the little finger when you spread out your hand. So the little finger is needed for that measurement. Zu Kmitza, the next one, what we call in English the ring finger, is called in Lashon Kodesh the Kmitza, because the Pashtus, that's where the Kmitza begins. You begin from that finger and go from there, meaning that you don't use your little finger for the Kmitza. So that's what he's asking. You're telling me Kitakamti Inchi, implying that you use all four regular fingers from the index finger to the little finger, but according to that, it comes out that no, the fourth finger is called Kmitza, because that's where the Kmitza starts. But he continues with the rest of the Braisa. Zu Amma, the next one, the middle finger, is called the Amma. That's what we measure an Amma with, is the definition of an Amma is the distance from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger. In particular, Rashi mentions that there were two. The Gemara tells us the mission that we're going to learn later on. We're going to learn later on in our Masechta that there were two measuring sticks in the Beis Hamikdash to measure an amma. One of them was slightly longer than the other for reasons that we'll talk about there. But they took somebody's, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's, maybe somebody else's, the length from his elbow to his middle finger and used that as a basis for the amma. And therefore, the middle finger is called Amma in token of that. Next, Zu Etzba. The index finger is called in Lashon Kodesh Etzba, which is when the Pasuk says that the Kohen should dip his Etzba into the blood or into the oil or whatever and sprinkle it, as we've been learning the last couple of days, then that's the finger he uses. Zu Gudol. And the thumb is called, Gudol, which is what, when we've learned about the Mitzvah, who has the blood and the oil of his Korbanos applied to his ear, thumb, and big toe. The thumb is called Bohen in Tanakh Hebrew, and Gudol in Mishnah and Gemara Hebrew, and then it's used for that reason. So each finger has a different function. The point is that the fourth finger, the ring finger, is called Kmitza. Why? Because the Pashkus Kmitza begins there. So Rava answers, what I mean by we use all the fingers is Elola Hashvos. What I mean is in order to smooth out the edges. If you have, you take the claimants only with the three fingers, the index finger, the middle finger, and the ring finger. You take the claimants with that. Now you're going to have flour stick out from the sides, then you use your thumb and your little finger to wipe off that excess. Kloima, again, here's a marginal note that got into the Gemara. By mistake, Kaloyma Klimitz Malaya Yad, you take a handful, Kadesh Loyay Choser, so it's not lacking anything, and then you use a little finger to wipe off anything that's sticking out from the side of it, anything that's sticking out from the bottom over there. Okay. So the Gemara says, Heichi Ovid, so what do you mean? How exactly do you do it? Exactly that. He takes his three fingers and uses them to cover the palm of his hand, Ad Shemagia al pas yada until they reach, so he covers his three fingers. Ad Shemagia al pas yad until they reach. So Choif actually means he stretches out his fingers, and takes the flower into them. Ad Shemagia al pas yada and then he bends them over until they reach the palm of his hand. The koinets, and within them is the koinets. In fact, we learn like that in the Braisa. When the Pasuk says Meloi Kumsoi, when the Pasuk says that the Kohen has to take his full handful, Yochol Mavoda, you would think that it could be sticking out. It could be sticking out from the side, it could be sticking out between his fingers and the palm of his hand. Nope. Tamad Lama Bikumsoi. No, because the Pasuk says it has to be within his toymets. So only within his cupped hand. But if it said only b'kumso, you would think maybe it just means with his fingertips, meaning, in other words, instead of having his fingers cover as much as possible the palm of his hand, maybe they should be curled over so that they reach only as close as possible to where the fingers actually begin, and there would be very little flour in there. No, because the Pasuk also says his full koimetz, implying that it should be full. Okay, so what do you do? As we just said, he stretches out his fingers, curls them over until they reach, bends them over until they reach, and the palm of his hand, and they cover as much space as possible. And within that, he takes the fragments. Now, when it comes to, we've talked about before, and we're going to learn in more detail later in our Masechta, that besides for a flour mincha, which is flour mixed with oil, you also have various kinds of menachas that are fried and baked. So in particular, we're focusing over here on the two that are fried, machvas and marcheshes, which, as we learned a few dafim ago, the machvas is a shallow pan, and the machvas and the marcheshes is a deep pan. And the consistency of the menachas is different. But in any case, both of them are baked and then fried. Now, that means, in other words, that they have a sort of, unlike flour, they have a certain stiffness to them. So, but those also you have to take the koimetz. So moichik the gudlei milamayla over etzboik tana milamata. Then he has to smooth out. He still has to smooth out the edges. He's going to have to use his thumb on one side and his little finger on the other side. So therefore, now we've fulfilled everything. Now we have it's within the It's within the koinets without anything sticking out, but it is only those three fingers. Therefore, you have to wipe it. Now, Rashi explains later in the Masechta, actually, that in fact you do have to wipe off the excess when it comes to all menachas. But the reason why we're focusing over here on machas and malkeshes is because we're going to go on and say it's a very hard avodah to do that. With a flour mincha, it's not that difficult. It's crumbly after all, so it's relatively easy to use your finger, to use your thumb on one side and your little finger on the other to wipe off the excess. But when you're talking about a baked or fried mincha, we're going to learn later in the Masechta that before you do the kmitzah, you break it up into pieces. Nevertheless, there's still the large chunks. So to be able to get off the edge of that chunk that's sticking out of the fingers with your using your thumb of the same hand or using your little finger of the same hand is actually very difficult to do. And so the Gemara says, "Vizuhi avoda kosher shel mikdash." This is a difficult avoda in the Beis Hamikdash to do. Tosfos points out, actually, that we're going to learn later in the Masechta, there is an opinion that even with those baked and fried menachas, now we're going to talk about that you break them up. One opinion is that you just break them up into large chunks. The other is that actually you break them up so much that they become crumbly again. You break them up basically to the consistency of the flour from which they were originally made. Well, according to that, Tosfos says, and it wouldn't be any harder to do with those than with any other menachas. But if we say, according to the opinion, that it's just broken up into large chunks, and that is how the Rambam passes the halacha, then indeed, that using your thumb on one side to wipe off part of that chunk and leave the rest inside, and the same thing with your little finger on the other side, is actually something very difficult to do. Before I should bring up the point, so why do you need that? Just wipe it off with your left hand and have done with it, or have another kohen do it or something. So they talk about the idea that this wiping off and making it exactly a kohen is part of the avodah, therefore it can't be done with the left hand as we learned before, and therefore there's also the idea it's all part of one avodah, and you never really have a concept where two kohenim can do one avodah together. And therefore, that would be a reason to say that he has to dab could do it with his own right hand, which would be very difficult. So the Gemara asks, Zu v'tulo, you're telling me this was a difficult avodah, implying there was no other one. Varika malika. What about malika? We learned in Zvachim that the way the Kohen has to hold the bird, again, he has to hold the bird in his right hand, stretched out over his hand in exactly a certain position, and he has to do malika with his thumbnail, piercing through the bird's neck, from the bird's spinal cord and neck and everything. That's also very difficult. And what about the taking the double handful that the Kohen Gadol has to do on Yom Kippur, where he takes a double handful of Torahs, and he pours it into a spoon and brings that spoon together with a pan of coals into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then in the Kodesh HaKadoshim he has to transfer the Torahs without spilling a drop of it. He has to transfer it from the spoon back into his cup cans, and remember, nobody else can be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim with him. So he has to somehow manipulate it. There's various possibilities. He can hold the spoon in his teeth and bend downward. He can hold it between his knees and rotate it. I think the Rashami even brings up a possibility, if he's really acrobatic, he could throw it up into the air and turn it, turns upside down in the air and falls into his cupped hands. Whatever. That's also a very difficult avoda. So what do you mean? This with Kmitza is a very difficult, is the difficult avoda in the Mishnah when we have those as well. Okay, and you're right. Ella zuhi achas ma'avodas kosher shel mikdash. You're right. Don't say that it is the hardest avoda. It's one of the hardest avodas in the Beis Hamikdash. In fact, there are a couple. Later on in the Masechta, actually, it points out that the most difficult of all is a minchas chote, because at least the other menachas you have are mixed with oil, so they're it's doughy. So you can have it. It's possible to take a koimetz and not have a drop of it fall out so easily. And the machmas and machkeshes and the rest of them, fine, you know, again, it's baked. It's difficult to break off the pieces on the side, but on the other hand, at least you're not likely to lose some of it from your finger. But a minchas chote, which is dry flour, you're very likely to drop some of it out of your hand, and therefore that the Gemara later on calls that specifically one of the avodah kosher within this concept of taking a kmitza. With a minchas chote, it's even more difficult. So that's how you do it. So that's how you do it then. So you have three fingers full of the mincha, and you use the other two fingers to wipe off the excess. There's a couple of places in his writings where the Rebbe Yitzchok, the Rebbe's father, talks about an interesting Kabbalistic idea behind this. He says the five fingers represent, among other things, the five letters of the name Elikim, which represents Dvora. There's a concept in a number of places in Kabbalah about transforming the letters by substituting each one, each letter with the one before it, and then that has significance in Kabbalah. So you have when it comes to other kim, you have a concept like that, but you substitute it and you come out with something called achdatam, aleph chof dalad tesim shlosman. So the idea is, in other words, there's no letter before aleph, so you can't transform it into anything, so it stays aleph, and the mem of other kim, the letter before it, is a regular mem, and then at the end of the word, it turns right back into a shlosman. So it's only the middle three letters. Lamed becomes chof, hey becomes dalad, yud becomes tes. And there's an idea that represents sweetening and moderating the concept of gvura, etc. Sort of Levik relates that to our Gemara over here. We're saying that you use only the middle three fingers out of the five, in the same way as over there, only three out of the five letters of Elikim are transformed and become a moderated kind of gvura, which is what the Kmitza of the Mincha is all about. By the way, speaking of Kmitza as representing Gvura, and represent, there's an interesting, cute vote from the Moshitza Rebbe that says when the Gemara had asked Ketzad Koimsin, and he answered Kidakamsi Inshi, a vote on it is that the question is Ketzad Koimsin, how Koimsin, Meloshin Kamsin, like when a person is stingy, how does it come about that a person is stingy? And the answer is kidakamsi, when people are stingy, inchi, the word inchi means people, but it also means to forget. Because people forget what their purpose in life is and what the Eibishter gave them wealth for, and they think that they just need to save it all for themselves. So there's also the idea, in other words, that the person has to learn to overcome that middah and actually do the kmitzah properly to get rid of that middah of kamsanus, of stinginess, and be generous to tzedakah. Okay. The Gemara continues. I'm a papa, particularly Maloy Kumse Kidakamsi Inchi. Now the papa says it's obvious to me, as we said before, that Maloy Kumse means that you take a koimetz the way that people regularly take it. Now most of the Mephoshim understand that the papa is actually referring to something different over here. He's not referring to how many fingers. Rashi explains like this. If you have to take a handful of something, how are you going to do it? You're going to turn your hand on its side. You're going to stick your hand into the pile of flour. And then once your hand is inside the flour, then you're going to bend your fingers down towards the palm and encase some flour in there. So in other words, he's saying it's obvious that that's the way to do it. And the question is, what if he puts his hand into the flour in various other ways, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain? On the other hand, the Rambam, both in Pirush HaMishnayos and in Yad HaChazaka, understands that actually La Halacha, the Kmitza is done with four fingers and not with three, like we've been saying until now. So the Ma'ari Kurkus and different other Noisa Kelim on the Rambam talk about that the Rambam would understand the Papa's statement, Kidakamsi Inchi, as meaning the same as we said before. Rava had said before, when Abaya asked him how you do Kmitza, he says you do it the way people normally do, and Abaya asked on him from the Braisa that calls the fourth finger Kmitza, and the answer was that we do it with three fingers. But now the Rambam would understand that Papa disagrees with that and says that no, in fact, Kmitza is done with all four fingers. And therefore, according to that, so you have, fine, you use the thumb to wipe away the excess at one end, but you don't have anything to wipe away, you don't use any of your fingers to wipe away at the other end, because the kmitza does have to be within the little finger as well. According to that, the Keren Oda says that Amma may also understand that in that case, wiping off the extra is not considered an avoida, and therefore there's no problem to do it with the left hand. So now Rapapa asks within this, again, going back to Rashi's explanation that a papa is saying the normal way of doing kmitza would be that you put your hand on its side and you dig it down vertically into the flour, and then you bend your fingers and close the flour. So now, what about if he did the kmitza using his fingertips? So Rashi describes that what he does is he has his finger is his finger is palm down on top of the flour. Then he digs his fingers into the flour and encases the flour in his fingers that way. So would that work? Asks your papa. What about if he does it from the sides? So Rashi explains two possibilities. It can from the sides can be that he got the he put the back of his hand on the flower. He moved his hand from side to side until the flower gets into his hand. So would that be a valid kmitza? asks your papa. Rashi says the second explanation means instead of taking the kmitz from the middle of the keli as he normally would, he does it from the side of the keli. So would that work? And then another question. What about mimata lemaila mai? What about if he does it from the bottom to the top? So now Rashi explains that he has the back of his hand on top of the flower. Instead of sticking the side of his hand into the flower, he sticks his fingertips into the flower and then goes from there and collects the flower in through his fingertips that way and then onto the palm of his hand and takes the kmitza. So, what would be the din? In all those cases, is that considered a valid kmitza? And the Gemara says, teku, we can't answer those. We don't have a clear answer one way or the other to those. Which the Rambam paskens in that case, that you shouldn't do it, but if you did and you offered that kmitz, then b'dieved the mincha is kosher. That's in general the Rambam paskens when it comes to tekus in matters of korbanos, means you shouldn't do it, but b'dieved you did it, then it'll be acceptable. Similarly,
That seems very, very hard to understand. If the Gemara itself says teku, how can the Rambam come and say, but yeah, it's kosher? Seems inconsistent completely.
Well, I know, because what it would mean is, in other words, that teku, just so we don't know, so therefore there's reason to say that it might be kosher, and there's reason to say it might be possible. The fact is, you also have a concept called Ein Mevi'in Chulin La'Azara. You can't bring Chulin to the Azara. So now, let's say, for example, we were to declare this mincha posel, and we would say to the person, you have to bring another mincha, but maybe it was kosher, and therefore, so then we can't have him just bring another mincha, because he can't just bring another mincha that he's not required to bring. So that would be a reason to say that therefore we have to just leave well enough alone. We have to suppose that the mincha was acceptable, that way we're not bringing chul ma'azar afterwards.
But he is that on a Suffolk, the Raisa, how can you make it kosher? This doesn't make any sense.
First of all, it's not necessarily Daraisa. Maybe Daraisa, any way that you take the koimitz, as long as you have a koimitz full of flour, it's kosher. Maybe the whole concept that you need a certain position of the hand and everything is only the Rabban. But even if not, sometimes you have, and things Daraisa as well, sometimes you have some of a lachatchila dikka and a b'diyeva dikka way of doing it.
One second. You're saying that the kmitza, the way kmitza is done, can be the rabbanan?
No, of course. The fact that you need a kmitza is daraisa, of course. But the way in which you position your hand to do it, maybe it's only the rabbanan. Maybe it's just a practical thing. But the kohenim found that's the most practical way to get a complete kmitza. Who knows?
Where is there any source that says that the way you do the kmitza is from the rabbanan? Which source says that it's daraisa,
you took a handful. Any of these ways, you do get a handful.
That's
fine. But in other words, whether you stick the side of your hand in and then bend your fingers, or whether you do it palm down and then bend your fingers, or whether you do any of the other ways your papa has mentioned, and the fact is, you end up with a kernel of flour. Maybe that's good enough on a daraisa level.
Maybe not. But that's what I'm saying. It's a suffix.
That's why we have to.
And the Rambam says that teku, exactly. Teku is a suffix. So how can the Rambam come and say, but yeah, that it's kosher?
Because again, we don't want to bring chulin ma'azara. It would be very nice to be machmir, but if you're machmir in the halachas of kmitza, then it may come out that you're maple in the halacha of not bringing chulin ma'azara.
That's irrelevant.
That's very relevant.
You can't make a suffix. All right, listen.
That is how it is. That is the Rambam's usual rule when it comes to matters of teku. When it comes to something that's teku in the halachas of korbanos, the Rambam generally passes things like that. It means you shouldn't do it lachatchila, but b'dieved if you did it, then the korban is fine.
So according to Rambam, all the sekers deraisa, but b'dieved.
No, in general, stuff deraisa, you machmir. But over here, we're not talking about
that's my question.
No, but here, because here, I guess that I'm would understand. We're not talking about a suffix daraisa of whether, we're talking about just whether the method that he used to take the kmitza is, whether the method that he used to do the kmitza is different than usual. But nevertheless, the fact is he did do the kmitza, and therefore it's good enough. No, so like, for example, if he has too much or too little or whatever, if he has too much or too little, then yeah, that impinges on something daraisa. But, when you're talking about just the question of how he did, of how actually he put in the, how exactly he put in the flour, then maybe we're saying there's not so much a problem with that if he does that differently.
It's amazing that such an essential avoda would never have been transmitted to the Kohanim, and that
transmitted to the Kohanim, but in the length of the Golos, it got forgotten as other things. When Mashiach comes,
there's no source. Right, of course, but there's no source saying that it's been lost.
Apparently it is. We saw this before, that Abaya had to ask how you do kmitza in the first place. Why else would he have to ask? When the Chofetz Chaim was starting to push the point that we have to learn the Seder Kodshim, he was saying exactly that. Mashiach is going to come, and we're not going to know the relevant halachas. So there's both things. We need to know the relevant halachas, which for that we have Seder Kodshim, and we have the Rambam, and so forth. And then you also have the practicalities, how you do things, which those are going to have to be retaught as well.
That's a truism. That's obvious. Okay. You don't have to say that. Of course we have to learn it.
So the point is, when we have a suffix, and that suffix could have existed in prior generations as well. Maybe it just happened. Nobody ever did commit something like that. And now the question would come up, what if somebody does do it like that? Is it valid or not? Obviously, when Moshe first taught the din to Aaron and to Bnei Yisrael, he would have told them that. But it never happened. It could have never happened in 1,300 years of Avodah that anybody ever did that. Now the question is, hypothetically, if somebody now went and did that, what would be the din? All right. Anyway, we need to go on. Okay, so the Gemara continues. In a similar vein, we can ask the similar questions as far as the Kohen Gadol taking the double handful of Torahs. By the way, as far as this Milamata Lamaila, so again, Rashi had said Milamata Lamaila would mean that he stuck in his fingertips and then brought in the flour into his hand that way. Tosfos discusses and says that no, what it means is that he sticks in his hand kind of at an angle and puts in first his palm and then his fingertips. Before we were saying he has to put his hand, the proper way to do it is to put his hand exactly vertically going down into the flour. Now the question would be if he kind of angles his hand and puts in his palm first and then his fingertips afterwards. Tosfos says it's another possible meaning of Milamata Lamaila. So now we have a similar question Rapapa is going to have similar questions as far as the Kohen cupping his hands and taking the double handful of Torahs on Yom Kippur. So a similar question, Bori Rapapa. It's obvious to me that when the Pasuk says that he has to take a Meloi Chofnav would be the usual way that people take a double handful of something. But again, we can ask, what if he stuck in the tips of his fingers into the Ketodas and then that way gathered it into his hands? Mahu, what would be the din? Minatz Dodin, Mahu. What about, again, if he did it from the sides, putting the back of his hand on top of the ketores and then moving his hand back and forth until the ketores gets into his hand, or from the side of the keli instead of from the middle of it, what we did in. Also, chofan vizu, what if he takes a separate handful with each hand, vikirvan zuitzelzu, and he brings them one close to another, mahu, what would be the din? Is that considered a double handful, or does he have to put in both hands touching one another into the ktonus? And again, teku, so again, all these things are teku, and again, the Rambam paskins all these things, he shouldn't do it, but if he did it, then b'dieved, the ktonus is valid. For the same reason, Rabashtus, because we can't tell the Kohen Gadol, sorry, your ktonus was possible, go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim again, because after all, there's also an issum in Atzorah to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim more often than necessary. Another question. What would happen if he stuck the koimetz onto the side of the keli? Now, Rashi explains that we're talking about placing the koimetz into a second kaiyum. We've learned before, once the koyim does the knitza, he takes the koimetz and places it into another kli shoris, which is the equivalent of, like you do Kabbalah Saddam, into a kaiyum, the same way over here you place the koimetz into another kaiyum. So now the question is, what if instead of putting it into the bottom of the keli, what if he stuck it to the side of the keli? What would be the din? Toast kliba inim, do we just need that it's inside a keli? Well, fine, it's inside the keli. Ojumah hanochav, the sofa inim, or maybe you have to place it inside the keli, meaning that you have to place it onto the bottom of the keli, not stick it to the side. And again, teku. So again, we're not certain about that. And boy, Ma'abravashi, and Ma'abravashi has yet another question. Hafchilamana, what if he turned the keli upside down? The dabkil koimetz var isa demana, and he stuck the koimetz. The koimetz, after all, with most of the nachas, is made of flour and water. Flour and oil. So it's got a consistency. It can stick the same way in the previous question. It can stick to the side, or here it can stick to the bottom. And not fall off so easily. So what if you turned the keli over and stuck the koimetz into the back side of the keli? So Rashi explains, we're talking about one of those kelim that has, like you have with some, with a, like with stemmed kiddush cups, you often have, though there'll be like a receptacle on the underside of the keli. Like you have, sometimes you have some bowls that have like that. They have like they have a base to them, which itself is hollow, and you could put something inside that. So what if you were to do that? That's one explanation. Shetim Kubetzis brings another possibility that it can actually just be the keli does not have that second receptacle. It's just he's holding the keli upside down. If he'd hold a bowl upside down, but he sticks the mincha onto what is supposed to be the floor of the keli, and now is the top of it because he's holding it upside down. And again, because it's made of flour and oil, it's sticky, and therefore it's able to stick over there. So again, what would be the din? Do you just have to have it? You place the koimetz inside the keli, and therefore that's fine, you have it. Or maybe you have to put it in the normal way into the proper receptacle of the keli, not that back receptacle like Rashi is learning, or not when the keli is upside down, and you're doing it inside the keli, the lekka, and here you don't have it, and again, teku, and again, these things are teku. The Rambam has a different understanding of these last few questions. Rashi is saying that the question is about the kiddush koimetz, about the point that you have to take the koimetz and place it into a second kli shoris. The Rambam understands that all these questions, rather, are about the original mincha itself. Where you're taking the koimetz of the mincha from? If you're taking it from an upside down keli or things like that. So again, the Rambam paskens teku and says, and it's because teku, the Rambam paskens that therefore b'di'evad it'll be acceptable. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ketzad hu oisa, how does he do when he's taking the koimetz? He sticks out his fingers over the palm of his hand. Now Shittim Kubetzis takes out these words because while they do belong to the Mishnah, they actually belong to the previous Mishnah on Daf Vav. When we learned on Daf Vav, the Mishnah that had talked about that if the koimet is too big or too little, if there's foreign matter in it, or if some of it is missing or whatever, that's possible. So then the Mishnah would finish off. So how do you actually do it, and how do you make sure that there's nothing sticking out between the fingers and so forth? Is you spread out your hands over your palm and take the koimet that way. So this would belong there rather than here in the Mishnah over here. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Riba Shamna. If you put too much oil into the mincha, the mincha is supposed to have one isaren and one loig of oil. So if you put in more than one loig, we're going to talk about later on how much extra would you have to put in for it to be a problem. So riba shamna, if you put in too much oil, hiso shamna, or if you put too little oil, less than an isaren, hiso levoinasa, or if you put in not enough levoina, the amount of levoina that he's supposed to put over there is one koimetz, one handful of levoina. So if he puts less than that, sula, then the mincha is possible. Now, one thing you'll notice the Mishnah does not talk about is if he puts too much levoina, the Gemara is going to address that one. So the Gemara says, Heifi dami riba shamna. What do we mean that when we say that he added too much oil, how much extra would he have to add for it to be a problem? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, or actually it's really supposed to be Rabbi Lazer, the Amora, Kigun shehifrish lo shnei lugim. What we would mean is that he designated two lugim of oil with the mincha, and he actually mixed it into the mincha. Rashi explains. So now, in other words, now it becomes like two menachas, because each mincha is supposed to have an isarim. Now he put in enough oil that now you have enough oil over there for two menachas. So at this point, the Gemara is assuming. Now, Mephoshim talk about how exactly, I mean, how would the second lug become Kaddish in the first place? So you could say he said that one lug out of the two should be Kaddish. It could be that he made them lachrayos, that he made it that he said one lug and then another lug is backed up in case the first one spills or whatever. In any case, so he separated, so he designated two lugim. They're now considered to both belong to this mincha for either of those reasons. So now, if he didn't actually mix them with mincha, no problem. Mix in one of the two lugim, and the other one he'll be poyed. But if he mixed in both of them, then we're saying it's no good. So at this point, the Gemara is assuming that a lug and a half wouldn't be a problem. So the Gemara asks, why do we have to understand that way? The loitma could go into Odeh Vashem and Dechol and Vashem and Dechavrata. Why doesn't Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar say very simple that it means, let's say that he put in a little bit of oil of chulin extra. So he put in the lug of oil that's supposed to go with the mincha, and then he mixed in a little chulin oil or shemen dechavata or oil that was supposed to go to another mincha. What forces him to say that we're dafka talking about where to begin with? He designated two whole lugim of oil for this one mincha. In other words, why don't we say that if it was a lug and a half, it would be possible? Like this, Rebbe Lazar's assumption is that a lug and a half wouldn't be a problem. Why? Because there's no such thing as a mincha that has half a lug of oil. So therefore, the half a lug we can kind of ignore, and therefore we can say there's only one lug became kaddish. But why? Why shouldn't he explain that it means anytime you add extra oil from such as cholin or such as from another mincha, then it would be possible, and therefore a lug and a half would also be possible. The chitema shemen dechulin v'shemen dechavrata like pasul. You're going to say, well, maybe indeed, oil of chulin or oil from that was supposed to be for a different mincha would not in fact pasul. Maybe it's pasul only if you put in oil that was designated for this mincha. And the idea would be, the idea would be that let's say a pebble got mixed into the mincha. It's certainly not going to pass all the mincha. All you have to remove the pebble before you take the koinet, like we learned before, but it itself won't pass all the mincha. So the Gemara at this point is assuming that maybe you could answer that in fact extra oil that never belonged to this mincha is not going to pass all it even if it actually got mixed in. But no, Master thought of Zutra Bar Truvia, Ela Me'ata, by that logic, then we should say, Minchas Choyte. What about when it comes to a Minchas Choyte, the Mincha of a Korban Ol V'Yored, where the Pasuk specifically tells us that you're not allowed to put oil, or that you're not allowed to put oil in, and if you put oil, it became possible, then you would have to ask, what's the problem? The possible shemen, where oil passes it, if you put it in, how would you ever find that din? If it was oil that was designated for that minchas choyta, by definition, the minchas choyta has no oil, and even if you designated oil for it, it would remain cholin because it would be the equivalent, let's say, of saying that I'm designating this barley flour, this rice flour, whatever, as a mincha. It doesn't become a mincha. It's meaningless. So the same way, a minchas choyta doesn't have oil. If you said this oil should be for the minchas choyta, it wouldn't work. And if it was oil of chulin or from something or from a different carbon, ha'amat le'pasul. You're assuming that it wouldn't pasul. So what would be the case where minchas choyta could become pasul by putting in that oil? The amat afres l'shemen. And if you're going to say he actually designated oil for it, given the less l'shemen, while chulin ninhu, then since it doesn't have, it's not supposed to have any oil, then it would be chulin. Again, a parenthetical note based on the explanation of Rashi that somebody put in to the Gemara by mistake. So wouldn't it mean, in other words, that it's not so, that in fact, it doesn't matter where the oil comes from, doesn't matter whether it was chulin oil or oil from another mincha or anything, where there's not supposed to be any oil, it will pass on a mincha slaita. Well, by the same logic, a regular mincha, which is supposed to have oil, but only one lug, if he put in extra oil, no matter where that oil came from, it should be possible. Why is Rebbe Lazar saying that only if he added oil that was supposed to belong to that mincha, which by definition would be a whole lug, then it would pass on? So the answer is no. But Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lozer, really, again, Rabbi Lozer, no, what Rabbi Lozer is saying, loy mikboya karmar. He's not saying that only oil that belonged with that, that only oil that was designated for that mincha will pass the lid if there's extra. He means loy mikboya karmar. He's saying one of those needless to say things. Loy mikboya de cholin or de chaberta, needless to say oil of cholin or oil from a different mincha, any amount, the pasul that will pass the mincha. But if when he started desert, when he made the neder to bring the mincha, to begin with he designated two lugim of oil, you could argue each one is suitable to go with the mincha, because after all, the mincha needs a lug. So fine, he designated the second one as backup for the first one, or he said one out of the two should be kosher, should go with the mincha. But the fact is, he did designate them and he did give them kedusha at the same time as the mincha. So you could argue, emaloy lifsel. So even if he actually puts both of them into the mincha, then it should be kosher. So you could say, in other words, mela, if it was a lug and a half, then we would say that, yeah, half a lug. There's no such thing as the kedusha of a half a lug, and therefore that would be the equivalent of putting in cholin oil. But if you put in two full lugin of oil that you were makadish, you would think it should be good. Emaloy lifsel, you would think it should be possible, kamash malon, and therefore the missionary is telling us that even in that case it's possible. So he doesn't mean not only in that case it's possible. It means that even in that case it's possible. Okay. Well, the question is, so the question is, where indeed does Rabbi Lazar know that concept? Where what does force him to understand the Mishnah that way, rather than saying that the Mishnah is saying only that any extraneous oil from outside would pass the lit, but not oil that was designated with the mincha? How does he know that? So Rabbi says because Rabbi Lazar was bothered by the phrasing of the Mishnah. My iri de toni riba shamna. Why does the Mishnah mention that he added its oil? This means riba la shemen. It could just say that he added oil to it. Ela ha kamash malan. Therefore, you understand that the Mishnah is telling us the afagav dehifrish la shnei lugin, that even though he designated two lugin, shamna, it's oil that was meant to go with this mincha, or that he intended to go with this mincha, and nevertheless, it was designated l'shma together with the mincha. Nevertheless, it still passels it. So therefore, but again, that doesn't mean that only that passels it. Means that even that passels it. And how much more so, oil of cholin or oil from a different that was supposed to be with a different mincha. The Mishnah said chisul levoinasa. The Mishnah had said that if he put in too little levoina, then the mincha is possible. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa chos rava omda al kodesh echad. If the lavoina, if some of the lavoina is missing, and all you have left is one piece. What it is like this. Lavoina is a sap that comes from certain trees, and then it hardens into granules, and those granules are called lavoina in Hebrew, and frankincense in English. So you have each one comes off, each one is basically a bit of sap from the tree that hardened and became a granule like that. So in other words, we're not just talking about like you can break that up and that'll still be considered kodesh echad. The definition that Rebbe Brisker explains that kodesh echad means a complete granule of it as it came off of the tree. So now, if there's only one piece left, sula, then the mincha is possible. Shnei krotin, but if it was two pieces, ksheira, then it would be kosher, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yehuda learns. Reb Shimon Omer, our kodesh echad ksheira. Reb Shimon says, no, all you need is one piece, one granule of levoina, pochas mikan sula, only if it's less than that, now it's going to be possible. Now, our Mishnah doesn't seem to fit with either of those opinions, because our Mishnah is saying that you need the entire amount of levoina and nothing at all should be missing. So what's going on over here then? Is it that you need all the levoina that was originally designated to come with the mincha, or is it enough to have one granule? Now the Gemara is going to go and deal with that. Now the Gemara is going to go and deal with that point. You have this point from Rebbe Elwell Brisker about that it means each granule has to be intact as it came off the tree. The Chazanish says it a little differently. He says that it has to be that you have you have to have each piece of Lavoina has to be in its original state from when you do the kmitzah. So in other words, according to him, maybe if you broke up a piece before the kmitzah, it would be valid, but after that, each piece is nitva, and it has to be exactly that piece and no less. Anyway, so the question is how that fits with our mission. So we want to ask, but first let's deal with Reb Shimon's opinion. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, Reb Shimon Omer, Chometz Levona Shechasa Kosher Upasal. Reb Shimon says that if a Chometz Levona is missing anything, then it's Pasal. Now, Rashi does not have the Girsa Reb Shimon Omer, and in fact it's in parenthesis over here, and a number of the Achronim Taka take it out. So therefore, but nevertheless, Rashi says the Gemara knew that this braisa is according to Reb Shimon. So therefore, so we can ask on it to contradict Reb Shimon's opinion. Here we just said, Reb Shimon said, as long as there's one kodak, one granule of Levona, then it's kosher. Whereas in the Braisa, in the second Braisa, he's saying that if any of it is missing, it's kosher. Tosfos, by the way, discusses the point that, you know, we find, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, about different cases where Levona is brought. You have Levona can be brought as a korban on its own. We're going to learn near the end of the Masechta. We also have, there's also the Levona that comes in the spoons, that in the spoons or bowls that go on the Shulchan, that go with the Lechem upon him every week. There, it's a koimitz for each one, but in general, the idea is, Tosfos says that every time you have to have a koimitz of Levona for Mincha. For now, if the koimetz of the mincha itself, or the levona, is missing anything, then the braisa says, Reb Shimon says it would be falsal. But unless it's fine, Tony, you have to fix up the wording of the braisa, koret levona, shachosa, kosher upasal. If you have the piece of levona, the granule of levona, and any of it is missing, then it's fossil, so then it would fit, so then it would fit with what Reb Shimon had said in the braisa at the bottom of the previous album. Or be both same. So in other words, you would have, our Mishnah says, that on Mishnah had said that Chisu Levoinosa, if he's lacking Levoina, but it doesn't say how much, has to be missing. So the Braisa would be saying that one opinion according to Rabbi Yehuda is it's enough for two granules, and according to Rabbi Shimon, one. But it can't be less than that one granule. Again, according to the Belville Brisker, it means from the beginning, it has to be exactly as it came off the tree. According to the Chazon Ish, the key factor will be what was the size of that piece at the time of the commencement. The Gemara says, we both say, or I could give you another answer. There's a difference between Levona that comes together with the Mincha, where there, as long as you have one granule according to the Shimon, or two according to the Yehuda, that's good enough. Whereas the second Braisa is talking about when the Levona is brought together, when the Levona is brought by itself, where again, we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta that a person can bring Levona by itself as a korban. So now you have to have a full koinitz of it, and if any of it is missing, then it's fossil the same way as if anything of the mincha is missing, it's fossil. So the Gemara points out, you really actually have three opinions on the subject. Our Mishnah was a Sam Mishnah, and Sam Mishnah Reb Meir. So Reb Meir saw a koinitz v'tchila, koinitz v'tzot. Reb Meir holds, you need to have, when you do the kmitzah, There has to be a full koimetz of levoin. Now everybody agrees, all the Tanoim agree that to begin with, when you bring the mincha, you have to bring a full koimetz of levoina with it. So the mayor holds the same way as you need a koimetz of levoina at the beginning, the same way you have to have that full koimetz at the end, when you're bruning the koimetz of the mincha, you have to make sure the entire koimetz of levoina is intact. Rabbi Yehuda would hold, yes, you need a koimetz of levoina at the beginning when you first bring the mincha, but at the end, when it comes to, once you did the kmitza, if all you have left, if most of the levoina was scattered or otherwise went missing, and all you have left is two pieces, then Rabbi Yehuda holds it's good enough. Rabbi Shimon Sava, koimetz v'tchil of a koimetz echad basayf. Reb Shimon would hold that you have to have a koimetz at the beginning, but as long as you have even one grain at the end, then it's fine. And the Gemara points out, Ushloshen Mikra Echadoshu. Now all three Tanoim are actually deriving their dinim from the very same pasuk. The pasuk describes that the kohen takes the koimetz and he offers it on the mizbeach. The eis kol levoina asher al mincha. He has to take together with all the levoina that is on the mincha. So what does it mean, all the Levona? Reb Meir Saba Abdi Isil Levona Ikava Badin Mincha Meikra. So Reb Meir holds, well, you have to have the full amount of Levona that was originally established with the Mincha. The Mincha has to begin with, at the beginning of the Avodah, the first Avodah that was done with the Mincha is Kmitza. You have to have, at that time, there had to be a Koimitz of Levona. Everybody agrees to that. So therefore, Reb Meir says it means that entire Koimitz of Levona has to still be intact at the end and all for another Mizveh. Reb Yehuda Saba Kol Vafilu Chad Koda. Reb Yehuda holds the word kol doesn't have to mean all, the word kol can be any. We find sometimes Tzukim where the word kol means any. Rashi brings an example from Malachim with the story of the poor woman, the widow of Evadia, who comes to Elisha and says, we have nothing in the house, and then they're threatening to take our children as slaves, etc. And she says, Ein Meshiv Chosko Kol Babayis. Your maidservant, meaning I, don't have coil in the house. She doesn't mean she doesn't have everything. She doesn't have anything. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says the same way. Kol halabona can mean any of the labona. So even if you only have one piece left, then it's good. So that would be one piece. But es l'rabas koda to acher. But because it says es kol halabona, then it means you have to have a second one. So therefore, you need two. Rabbi Shimon, es l'dada. Rabbi Shimon does not doubt in the word es in this kind of context. Tosfos points out he does agree there are places where we use S for a drasha, but here he doesn't hold that the S would mean anything extra. Therefore, he says you need only one granule of levina. So the Gemara continues. Let's talk further about. So we have a three-way machlokes where you have to have all of it. Now, Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef also explains in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Machlokas v'levoina ha'boim ha'mincha. This whole Machlokas would only be when the levoina is brought together with the mincha. So, levoina above the fasna, but when levoina is brought as a korban by itself, as we talked about before, a person can bring levoina as an independent korban, give a hakel, klemitz v'spil, a klemitz v'soit, everybody would agree that you have to have a klemitz at the beginning and at the end, lohochi itzrich, asher ala mincha, that is why, when the pasuk says es kol levoina, which we said means, and you have the three-way machlokas, what that means, You have the machlokas of what that means, whether it means all, whether it means some of it. Because there's a three-way machlokas, but the pasuk doesn't just say es kol alavona. It says asher ala mincha. That is on the mincha. Now, why does that mean? To teach us about having mincha ain, only if the levona is with the mincha do we have these various ways of explaining. Bifnei atzma loy, but if levona is coming by itself, then we don't say that at all. Then we definitively say that you have to have the entire kovetz. So when it comes to the mincha, you can talk about that there may be room for leniency, but when it comes to the levona that's being brought by itself, then it's all or nothing. Okay. Also, v'amar Rabbi Yitzchok, bar Yosef, amar Rabbi Yochanan. Another point, machlokas v'levoina ha'boim ha'mincha. The machlokas is only by the levoina that comes together with the mincha, whether if some of it is missing, then it's fine, and you don't need to put more, or whether you have to have all of it, as Reb Meir had said. Ava v'levoina ha'boim ha'bazichin, but when it comes to the levoina that's brought in the bazi- that goes in the bazichin, that goes in the spoonfuls, that goes in the spoons, that go on the shulchan together with the lachem upon him, then you have dirahakel, shnei kumsin, then everybody agrees that you need two kumsin at the beginning, batzchila, at the beginning of shnei kumsin basoif, and when you come a week later and you're taking the levoina off the shulchan to offer it on the mizbeach, and then at that point the lachem upon it becomes mutar to eat, then everybody agrees that you need the full two kumsin to be there all along. Okay, so there has to be, when you put it on the shulchan, one Shabbos, there has to be a full koimetz in each bowl, and when you take it off the following Shabbos, there also need to be a full koimetz in each bowl. So the Gemara says, pshita, isn't that obvious? By the lachem upon him, it doesn't even say the word kol. The whole thing that we're saying that maybe you have a leniency is because it says kol alavona, and we can talk about whether kol means all of it or any of it, but by the lachem upon him, it doesn't even say the word kol. The answer is ma'ud tema kimin bahari lechem asya. You could argue though that since the levona is brought together with the lechem upon him, Ke'asher ala mincha damya, it would be similar to the levona that's brought with a mincha, because after all, the lachem upon him is a form of mincha, chamash malan, therefore, Rabbi Yitzchok bar Yosef tells us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, it's not so, and in fact, it would be possible. An interesting point over here actually would be, well, so the Gemara says, within that, then we have within that, there's machloikas about Lavoina that's brought by itself, between Rab Ami and Rab Yitzchok Napcha. Chab Oma machloikas the Lavoina habona mincha. One says the machloikas of the three-way machloikas is when the Lavoina comes with the mincha, alpha the Lavoina habob, if ne'asma divahakal kremis, but chilav kremis v'soif. But when it comes to Lavoina that's being brought as an independent korban, as Rabbi Yochanan had said earlier, everybody would agree that you need a claimant at the beginning and a claimant at the end. And according to the other one, there's the same machloikas, even by Lavoina that's being brought as an independent korban, there would be tanoim who hold that it's good enough, even if some of it is missing, as long as you have one piece or two pieces left. Now, an interesting point, by the way, is that the Rambam paskins apparently not like our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is saying, and so far we've been explaining, that if any of the Lavoina is missing, then it's possible. But the Rambam does not paskin that way. He says that as long as you have two pieces of Lavoina, then it's good. One piece would be possible, but two. So he doesn't not like Reb Shimon, but two pieces would be kosher like Reb Yehuda. And the Kesef Mishnah discusses there and says that, yes, there is a Stam Mishnah, but the fact is, we also know when there's a Machlokas from Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the Halacha is generally like Rabbi Yehuda, and that would be why the Gemara is pointing out that Rabbi Meir is disputed by Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The Kesef Mishnah explains that as much as to tell us that, therefore, don't rely on our Mishnah, even though it's a Stam Mishnah, rather accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and therefore, as long as you have two pieces of Lavoina when you're coming to offer the claimants, then it's good enough and the Mincha is possible.
Isn't that a big move for the Ishtar to put two pieces of claimants?
Well,
I mean, if
it's obviously not the best thing. You should have the full claimants. But I'm not learning that as long as you have two pieces. What?
A big bizu to the Ishtar.
Not really a bizu. I mean, keep in mind, a poor person to begin with, who's bringing a mincha as a poor person, Hashem actually appreciates the korban. I don't know how much Lavoina costs, but I guess the fact is, as long as he made sure that enough of the Lavoina is left, two pieces, then it's something at least.
That doesn't mean it's kosher.
Okay, but that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's why it says kol halavoina. That's why it says es kol halavoina, to tell us that Hashem doesn't mind in that case.
How does he know?
But that's how he learns es kol. He says the word kol can mean any. And then es kol means to add one more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next, the Mishnah said chisu levoina sapsula, that if he had two little levoina that's possible, according to the different opinions, how much is too little? The Gemara says, "For yatir ksheira." Now that seems to imply that if there's too much lavoina, more than a koyment, then it would be kosher. V'hatanya yatir psula. What we learn in a brayta that if there's too much, it's possible. So, Amar Rami Bar Chama, gan sheifer shlo shnei kumsin. What the brayta means is if he designated two full kumsin of lavoina for it. So again, it would have to be, Tosfos just points out that it would have to be that he said one out of the two should be the one for this mincha, and you have the point, like we said before, it could also be lachrayus, that he says one is going to be for the mincha, and the other one is a backup. So then, because he designated two full klinsin, then that's considered too much. But if he added more lavoina beyond the klinsin, but not two full klinsin, then it would be kosher. That's how Rashi learns. Rashi also brings a second explanation that on the contrary, two kumsim would be kosher because look, you have a full koimetz, you can look at it either way. Either one koimetz is good or the other koimetz is good, and therefore it's not a problem. But if you have a koimetz and a half, let's say, then you can't say that because a half a koimetz, again, cannot become kaddish. Rashi doesn't like that explanation. However, Tosfos has some.
How can you say that kol means kol shihu? I mean, kol means kol. The whole piece. You need the whole amount.
The word kol,
it's not kol shehu. It should have said kol shehu then.
No, because the word kol by itself. The word kol by itself can mean any. The word kol by itself can mean any. Like we have with the story of the Evadia's widow. Okay.
Right. So it should.
Okay. So any. The kol means any. So as long as you have any, Lavona, then it's good. And he just learns from the word S that you need two beasts. Okay, but again, now we're talking about when you have too much Lavona. So now we're saying you have too much Lavona. So again, Rami Bahama says, if you designated two Kuntzin, so Rashi has two explanations. Rashi's preferred explanation is that if he designated two full Kuntzin and put them on the Mincha, then it will be possible, because then you have way too much. But if you have a Kuntz and a half, let's say, then Rami Bahama says, then the Mishnah would be saying that's fine, because less than a Kuntz is not considered significant. Rashi brings a second explanation the other way around. If you have two full kainzim, it will be kosher, because each one by itself is able to become kodesh. But if you had a kainz and a half, no good, because a half of kainz by itself can't become kodesh. So Rashi brings that as a second explanation, but he says, I don't like that explanation. Tosfos has some questions on Rashi's preferred explanation, and they go with the second explanation after all. That what it would mean is that when you have two kainzim, then the mincha would be kosher. But if you did a kainz and a half, then it would be possible. The chidushim on Yochasim LaRashba. One of Tosfos's questions is, we said before about oil, that any amount of extra oil passes it. Why by Lavona would it be different? And only if why by Lavona would it be different only if you have a full extra kaimitz? So he says, because after all, a kaimitz doesn't really have a specific size. The kaimitz is going to depend on a person's hand, as opposed to oil. You have a lug, which is a defined measurement. So fine. So Rami Bahama says that's the answer. It depends whether it was two or one and a half. Again, according to Rashi's preferred explanation, it means that if he designated two and put them on the mincha, then it'll be possible, but one and a half would be fine. According to Tosfos, it's the other way around. Also, Rami Bahama says again, what if he designated two handfuls of Lavona, the other Echamehen, and one of them got lost? So it depends, Kodim Kmitzah, if it was lost before we did the Kmitzah of the Mincha, Loi Hukbu, those two Kuntzim are not established to be together with the Mincha, so therefore the Mincha is kosher. You have one, right now you have one Kuntz of Lavona, so that one will go on the Mincha, and that's good. After Kmitzah, but if the second Kuntz was lost after the Kmitzah, so at the time of the Kmitzah, you actually had two Kuntzim that were designated for this Mincha, Hukbu, then Rami Bahama says, both of them are established together with the Mincha, and therefore, it's going to be possible because at the time of the kmitza you had two full kohenim. Or according to the other explanation, it means because now some of what was supposed to be there is missing. Ve'omer Rami Bahama, and Rami Bahama says another din. Hifresh abach kohenim l'shnei bazichin. What if, when it comes to the lachem aponim, you're supposed to have two handfuls of lavoina, one in each spoon? And instead he designated four. Again, he designated two, and the two, he said out of the four, two of them should become Kaddish, but he didn't specify which ones. Or he said two regular and two for backup, etc. So again, same idea. But of the Shnai Mehen Kodim Siluk Bazichin, if two of them were lost before the Bazichin were removed from the Shulchan on the following Shabbos, Loi Hukbu, then those extra cleansing were not established together with the Lachem Aponim, therefore it's all kosher. But if they were lost after the bazichin were removed, so when you removed them, you had four handfuls of Lavona, and now you're down to two, hukbu, then all of them have been established, and therefore it's possible again because you have too much Lavona. So the Gemara fought too lovely. Why does Rabbi Rami Bahama have to say that last point? Hainu ha, isn't that exactly the same as the previous din as far as other menachos? And the answer is Ma'od Tema. You might have thought otherwise. Given the border Kormit Dida, the difference is that with the Kormit of a Mincha, it's not there's no particular grain of flour that you can say is going to be part of the Kormit. It's going to be random wherever he sticks in his hand. As opposed to when it comes to the Lachem Aponim, the Kormit is clearly separated to begin with, because you have the Lachem Aponim and then you have the Lavoina. Kivin Shi Gias Manal Aperka. So you could argue once it came time to take apart the arrangement of Lachem Aponim and remove the bazichin, which, as we learned the other day, is the seventh hour of the day on Shabbos, command the prika damya, it should be considered as though it was taka already removed, and therefore at that point already it will become possible because you have the extra levina from Ashmalan. Therefore, Rami Bahama is telling us it's not so. Only when you actually remove the bazichin, if you still have that extra levina, then it's going to be a problem. But not if it was just there at the time when the bazichin are supposed to be removed, and they haven't been removed yet, then it'll still be kosher, and then you can remove them before you remove the bazichin. Now, we learned the other day, we did have the concept that there were, we talked about when the Lachem Aponim break, when one or more of the Lachem Aponim breaks, that then it depends whether it's the time to remove it or not. But here, we're not saying that. Here, we're saying that it's when you actually remove, the Ur Sameach, Reb says, the difference is, because then, as here we're talking about, when you have extra Levoina, if you pick up the Mezuzah, you're going to passel them, so therefore we're not going to consider as if you already picked them up, only when he actually picks them up, off the Shulchan, and there's still too much Levoina over there, will become passel, but otherwise it won't be a problem.